Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Okay, so it's a Saturday night, and it's only been a few days since we sent off Lumpa Liam and a group from Thailand after their visit here, and of course, here was the end of a longer visit to Ajahn Viradamo's monastery in Canada, Ajahn Jayanto's monastery in New Hampshire, the Pacific Hermitage, and then Abhayagiri. And, you know, while Lumpa Liam was here, he was very generous with his time and his teaching. And one of the things that struck me, you know, it's been a few years since we had him here, and just seeing the emphasis of his teaching and the that it was really focused around actually very ordinary things. And of course, that's a flavor of Thai forest tradition, flavor of Ajahn Chah. But I think it's really kind of the flavor of the result of really long practice and living the Dhamma. And that, what becomes important is not, so much about theory or any kind of astute intellectual analysis of phenomena, but what's directly experienceable? What's actually important? You know, where do we keep running into problems? And I'm sure that, everybody experienced the teachings in different ways, but certainly what I felt was this, of course, similar to Ajahn Chah, this immense practicality and grounding the reflection, recollections, in the, say, things like the body, and to really pay attention to that experience, because it's teaching us, and are we willing to learn from it, and can we use our experience of the body as a means of allowing us to really relinquish and let go. And this aspect of letting go is so central to entering into the Dhamma. And of course, when we reflect on the body, and also just reflecting on experience, because also one of the things that kept coming up over and over again was in different ways was just the natural reality of the worldly dhammas, praise and blame, gain and loss, status and disrepute, happiness and suffering. They were constantly either, running away from one of them or trying to manipulate and maximize the other somehow. And we expend huge amounts of energy and invest in our sense of self-worth or our sense of how we perceive our place in the world on these worldly dhammas. And of course, that's kind of hopeless. But when it's seen in that light of, oh, these are, yeah, this is really normal, this is really ordinary for there to be praise and blame, gain and loss, etc. It's not something strange. And again, that emphasis on that by seeing it and understanding that, we can learn from it. It isn't as if we can fix the world so that, say, we're not ever going to experience happiness or suffering again, or we're never going to have to deal with praise and blame again. It's more like that's always going to be there. But learning how to relinquish the attachment and reactivity that we have towards that. And there's this tremendous peace and stability that arises when we do that. And so there's this opportunity to be attentive and reflective and to experience the tendency of the world, of these worldly dhammas, and not be shaken by them. But it's also recognizing the ways that we invest in, and that investing in wanting to be praised, wanting to gain something, wanting to have some kind of recognition or status in some way. Because even, I mean, it's the way the mind works, you just say, because sometimes people are just so, I'm such a hopeless meditator. Well, at least it's something, we'll invest in it, and it has, at least it's a position, rather than saying, oh no, we don't need to invest in anything. We don't have to be somebody trying to have some kind of status in some way, shape, or form. A self position isn't really essential. So that this ability to keep seeing that we can be relinquishing. And the relinquishing is not negating anything, but it's a willingness to put down the tendency to try to establish a position. Ajahn Chah, one of the ways that he phrased it was that when we really practice and start to experience the fruits of the practice, we come to a place where there's no advancing, no retreating, and no stopping still. And you realize that we spend an inordinate amount of time plotting and figuring out, how can I advance? How can I get something? How can I be something? How can I go, forward in this way? Or, we're retreating out of fear or aversion or pulling back or getting out of something, or just getting mired in inertia. Whether it's a physical inertia or a mental inertia, not willingness to do anything, not being willing to do anything at all, or thinking that's actually the solution. Oh, I shouldn't do anything. But when we're not investing in that, then we're actually freeing up our energy, internal energy, space, a space in the heart to really respond with wisdom, to respond with compassion and kindness, to respond with a purity of intention. It's just that you're not investing in the result, in the self position that is, it's always angling for something. And it's just this reflecting on the ordinary. It's reflecting on these worldly dhammas. You're realizing that we don't need to try to either get something or get away from something from a worldly position, that our measure of things is not in the world, or that the similarly with the body, just really taking the experience of the body and realize, I can be learning from this. Having a body that is born, ages, becomes ill, and dies. And, is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it both? Is it neither? It isn't any of that. It's just, it is part of the human experience, and being able to learn from it, use it as a tool, a basis of recognizing, these are patterns in nature. Recognizing that what the Buddha is giving us the tools to understand these patterns of nature, so that we're able to be peaceful and free within them. So often we try to figure out, say, if we're not feeling so well, and then we'll try to figure it out, have a name for what we're feeling, have a name for the particular illness that we have, or the name for the particular symptom of whatever we're experiencing. Get a name for it. Of course, if you start looking, especially now with the internet, look up all of the diseases that the human body can have. That'll keep you busy for a while, but it won't actually make you feel peaceful. It won't make you feel comfortable. And in the end, all it is this experience of the body, having a physical body, and learning how to be comfortable within that. And the patterns of arising and ceasing are much more important and fruitful as a means of reflection on Dhamma, as opposed to trying to get a name for things, get a label for things, get a category to fix my experience in. It's like the that phrase that Ajahn Liam used. It's just it's a kind of a folk saying or a riddle in the northeastern dialect, speaking about the body, but it's plays on words and a little poem. It rhymes, but just pointing to that, at one, we're tall then short, and certain. I would say, the body, we grow up and we become tall to a certain extent as we age, and then we get shorter, get bent over, and this body mass goes down, and it's a pattern, it's a cycle that's there. Same black then white, sort of, especially in Asia, where that black hair is about the color of the hair. The hair, everybody's hair is black, and then, but as it ages, and people go gray, go white. That's a normal pattern. And then eyesight, that's all clear and distinct, but then it fades. Your eyesight changes, becomes weaker. And teeth are firm, and then they get loose. And so this, but as a, these rhymes that were it's very short, very concise, little phrases, but pointing to the patterns and change in the physical condition. And of course, those same changes are constantly taking place in the world around us. And so that to be able to investigate or reflect on having the physical experience, having energy and not, having good health and not. You know, and aging is a, it's like Ajahn Chah, I remember him saying, yeah, that's why you really start aging before you even come out of the womb, really. It's this constant process of aging and change. And it follows a whole cycle, and different people will follow different cycles. But it's what, it, in terms of Dhamma, is those patterns of arising and ceasing, coming into being and passing away, and that's where we can really learn and understand and have a handle on that whole process. And of course, it's those same patterns are the patterns that our mind goes through. Our mind, our emotions, our views, our opinions. And it isn't so important that whether they're intelligent or not, whether they are astute or not, but just to reckon that these arise and they cease. And it was just a thought. It was just a mood. It was just a view. And really seeing that the, you know, it's like the, you know, whether it's the, say, the body or the world around us, you know, so often what we feel is that this is what makes us suffer. You know, either, you know, we're experiencing something physically difficult, or we're experiencing circumstances in the world that are difficult and it causes us suffering. And, you know, the reality is that is not the source of suffering. It's wrong thinking, wrong views. It's the internal alignment and not recognizing that truth, that reality, not paying attention to that way things are, that's the actual, the Buddha's definition of, say, what is normally translated as ignorance, you know, which is not such a great translation, but it's more like a lack of true knowledge. It's the lack of seeing things in their true nature. That is the problem. So that to pay attention to how do I encourage myself to see things in their true nature. And that's where we have to pay attention to the experience of the body, the experience of these worldly dhammas, because we start to pay attention to the patterns that shine a light on that arising and ceasing, that quality of discontent or a feeling of unsatisfactoriness, and the fact that it really isn't under our control. It doesn't belong to us. It isn't ours. And so these patterns of anicca, dukkha, anatta, really. And it's not just sort of impermanent, unsatisfactory, you know, sort of impermanent suffering, not self, but it's more like the patterns of arising and ceasing, coming into being, being uncertain, having that that feeling of discontent. And it's really, really important that we, you know, in terms of practice, in terms of training and reflecting, investigating, to reflect on how can I be content with what I'm experiencing? You know, how can I have the feeling of having, of it being enough? You know, either in terms of, you know, physical things or mental experiences or, you know, our life itself. And to be able to just say, this is enough. You know, whether it's in an ordinary circumstance or it's, you know, we're coming to, we're really experiencing, say, the end of our life. And can we really feel, oh, it's real. My life has been enough. Because it isn't usually how we look on it. You know, we're always seeing things that we're lacking, that we should do, that we could do, that we want to do, that we want to be, we should be. We never feel that it's enough. And of course, that's the inherent suffering of in our existence. To really pay attention to that feeling, so that it is shining a light on that, because that's another worldly dhamma that is manifesting, and it's, if we use it rightly or use it skillfully, that's the catalyst for us to let go, to relinquish, to put down. Because it's never going to, it's, the resolution is not sort of, I don't quite feel it's enough. So if I just get more of this or tweak it like that or make it more somehow, then I'm going to fix it. But it's more in that being able to recognize, oh, that in itself is suffering. That in itself is the underlying problem, that feeling, and being able to relinquish, putting down, seeing clearly, seeing it in its true nature. And you realize that in all of our experience, and to really reflect on that, how do I feel that it's enough? Because, you know, whether it's, you know, in terms of physical things, I mean, it's kind of, you know, we still crave things. We crave experience. We crave, you know, enough. You know, we never really have, we never feel that there's enough, you know, peaceful states in our meditation, or wise insights in our practice. And there's always that, it's never quite enough. And the problem isn't really in getting it or gaining it. The problem is in that feeling of lack. And that's where this seeing things in their true nature. And there's a possibility of relinquishment there. There's a possibility of real letting go. Possibility of not, the possibility of not getting trapped in that tendency for advancing, retreating, or stopping still, because we're always looking for the solution is in something like, well, if I just advanced, or if I just retreated, or if I could just stop still, then I'd finally get it. But it's in the realizing, no, it's putting down everything, being present, knowing that feeling of, oh, this is enough. And it's a moment-to-moment experience. So it's something that we can experience here and now. This is the Dhamma of the Buddhas is a Pachubana Dhamma. It's something to be experienced in the present, in the here and now. It's not something that you're going to get in the future. You're going to gain some other time, somewhere else. Me, always happy. It's in this present moment. And reflecting and recollecting the ordinary aspects of existence is a doorway to that experience. It's not far away. It's not based on some kind of extraordinary, complicated insight or some special practice. But it's being willing to be attentive to the ordinary aspects of experience. The body doesn't get any more ordinary than that. Worldly dhammas of praise and blame, gain and loss, status and disrepute, happiness and suffering. These are ordinary. They're there. All it's happening all around us. It's happening, but it usually isn't taken in. And it's that quality again. The quality opanayiko is a quality of the Dhamma. It's Dhamma that leads inwards. We have to draw this experience into the heart, and this is where we become truly peaceful. Where we become truly awake. It's awakening to awakening to the ordinary. What the Buddha is teaching is this opportunity to awaken, and that it's not far away. And you see the results are it's not impossible for anybody. And this is something that where the Buddha said, if it wasn't possible, I wouldn't teach it. But because it is possible, then I teach it, and you can realize this Dhamma. And so much of it is learning how to step away from, to get out of the way of the getting out of the way of truth, because we keep inserting ourselves and complicating things. So just stepping back and seeing things in their true nature. And of course, it's because it's so present and simple, that makes it more difficult. But being willing to take on that conscious reflection of the ordinary, and that's the doorway. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.